is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna Spingola. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. That website is wvfoundations.org. Just a real quick comment from Joe, who sent me an email. He said, the size and makeup of the German Navy and Air Force versus the United States and Britain indicate who planned for war and worldwide domination. The German Kriegsmarine and Luftwaffe were more tactical rather than strategic, arms in support of the army, but performed gallantly in jobs that they were not designed to do. Stalingrad was neither a German mistake nor the turning of... Oh, okay, that's something else. Okay,
well, that's another note from you. We're going to talk about Stalingrad specifically, and the person wrote the email, he's absolutely correct. The Kriegsmarine, you know, they did not gear up for a war. The fact that Operation Sea Lion, the projected invasion of Great Britain, did not take place, was mainly, you know, people attribute it to the quote loss of the Battle of Britain, the air supremacy. That had nothing to do with it. The fact of the matter is that if the Germans wanted to, they could have achieved that air supremacy. The British never had real air supremacy. They're on their last legs air-wise. It had to do with the Kriegsmarine issue. They had never built. They had never built out that fleet in the manner in which they had projected it to in the build out in say 19. When they started building out in 1938. Their actual total build out year was actually 1943 to 1944. They had not anticipated being in a full regional war. And bear in mind, World War II was a regional war until the invasion of the Soviet Union. So, and there were one final comment on the euthanasia. Some other comments popped up. It had never involved gassing, as and we'll address this in the Holocaust program. It never involved the extermination of the handicapped and the mentally ill and those persons. And we'll cover this, Deanna, in the future program. And the program never even ran for very long before it was canceled. And again, it had more safeguards and was more properly operated than, again, the program that's currently legal in Washington and Oregon. And those programs in the state of Washington and Oregon were approved by none other than the voters. I mean, it's kind of interesting. So,
well, I always think, my goodness, people talk constantly about the euthanasia program under NSDAP Germany, when here in the United States, since 1973, we have killed almost 57 million people who were probably perfectly healthy and still in the womb. So I cannot imagine why people continue to talk about euthanasia programs in Germany.
That's right. Abortion was illegal in National Socialist Germany. It was illegal. And the euthanasia program developed in National Socialist Germany as a result. It was a pilot program as a result of it, as an individual case-by-case basis of those people who had incredible, painful life, terminal ending diseases that actually asked for it. They petitioned the Reichschancellery, and this actually came through Philipp Bühler, who was the head of the, I think it was the president, no, not the presidential chancellery, but one of the divisions of the Reichschancellery, and they decided we'll try it on a case-by-case basis, and that is actually how it was run. And, of course, it was greatly exaggerated by Hollywood and by, you know, people post-war. And like I say, it was eventually canceled, but it only came about at the request of individual German citizens who had such debilitating illnesses, and they were at end of life, and they were in such pain. And so this ran as a pilot program. It was canceled in 1941 and never instituted again. But they did not. The Germans themselves did not go out and say, "We think you look sick, or you're handicapped, or you're disabled, and so we're going to euthanize you." That never happened.
All righty, Rodney, we are going to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, from anything out of bounds concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
And our guest today is Rodney Martin, the director of Worldview Foundations. The website is wvfoundations.org. All righty. Go ahead and please continue with what you were saying before we went to the break.
Well, let's move on now to the big one. And this is, I think, this the Soviet campaign and Barbarossa, Operation Barbarossa. This is the one where people really talk about mistakes. And there's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on. Some people even argue whether that should have ever happened. And I think we need to really understand that even in the last probably 4 to 5 years, even Russian military historians have admitted that Stalin was planning a strike into Europe. Proper. He knew that the Germans were tied up in the West, or he perceived that. The British were intriguing in Moscow, and Hitler made a famous comment that Britain's only source of survival was that would be a Soviet intervention. And there's been, I've even seen some comments about a lack of proper German preparations, and there wasn't proper German intelligence, and that was patently false. That's not a mistake. The fact of the matter is there had been German reconnaissance. The fact is, on April of 1941, the Soviets actually shot down a German civilian, a quote-unquote a civilian Heinkel. The Germans had been flying reconnaissance planes at about 35,000 feet for months, probably since December, if I remember what I'd read properly in some of the archives. They've been flying these reconnaissance planes, and the Soviets, their fighter planes didn't have that high of altitude capabilities. But in this particular incident, in April of 41, one of those reconnaissance Heinkels, which they had taken the military markings off of it, and made it look to appear to be a civilian plane. They'd been flying kind of like the old Francis Gary Powers U-2 flights. This was the German equivalent. They'd been flying a reconnaissance plane over because they had been getting concerns about Soviet buildup in the what we would call European Russia, particularly in what we call today Belarus and Ukraine. So the Germans start flying reconnaissance planes over to see these, you know, Soviet buildups. And they were seeing huge military buildups. And I'm going to provide the listeners the actual numbers because it's available if you go digging in the archives, both in the Russian military archives, Russian historical archives, and the German archives. But in this particular date, in April 41, the Heikel had engine trouble. So they dropped their altitude, and the Soviets saw them, and the Soviet fighter plane shot them down. And they crash landed, and the pilots weren't wearing civilian uniforms. They were wearing Luftwaffe uniforms. And when the Red Army ground crew came upon them, they saw the film burning over to the side. I mean, you get the report. I mean, it's just fascinating. So they interrogated them, and they had basically made their excuse was that they got lost flying the Krakow from, because this was after the occupation of Poland. And there's actually evidence they'd been flying reconnaissance planes, and they were concerned. The Germans were actually genuinely concerned that the Russian military buildup. And so Hitler issued the actual order was order number 21 for the preparation for the invasion of the Soviet Union. And there was a couple of primary objectives, and this is you have to put this in perspective, because some people take the case that because Britain was still at war, Britain wasn't knocked out of the war yet, to invade Russia was a mistake. Well, you have Russia. The Germans have evidence that the Russians are building up in Belarus and Ukraine, and right up against the Polish border, and you have Britain is basically out of it. The United States is inherently isolationist. They have no desire to go to war. Roosevelt knows this. Roosevelt is telling Churchill, I don't have the political, it's not the political strength in Congress to come to aid. I can give you covert strength. I can fire on U-boats, which is what the United States was doing. I can freeze German assets, but I don't have the political muster to bring, to have American troops come back to Europe. So I can give you aid and comfort. I can give you lend lease. I can do all of this. Which is what Churchill did. People need to understand is Churchill basically bartered the British Empire to the Americans in exchange for some obsolete equipment. It's kind of interesting. But anyway, the goal of Barbarossa was to preempt the Russian invasion of Europe, which you would have had an iron curtain as far west as France had the Germans not invaded in June of 1941. The overthrow of Stalin and the occupation of European Russia. And actually, Hitler's purpose, Hitler wasn't even, the Germans were far more kind to the nations under German occupation. Hitler's goal, and this is well documented, he was actually going to let Stalin rule Russia east of the Urals. And in fact, his statement was he was going to let Stalin continue his interesting social experiments. And that is a direct quote. He was going to let Churchill retire to paint. I mean, this is in sharp, stark contrast to what was done to the Germans after they were defeated. There's a complete difference to how Germans treated nations under their occupation. Heck, Denmark had their own elections, and the Socialist Party won the elections under occupied Denmark. It's really interesting. And of course the timing of the invasion, people talk about as being a mistake. Well, you had this little situation down in the Balkans. The British always had this thing, especially Churchill, about the Balkans. The British were intriguing in Greece, and they were intriguing in Yugoslavia, and brought about a coup d'etat, which resulted in a pro-British governments in Greece and Yugoslavia. Well, you could not have the Germans and their allies in Romania, Bulgaria, and Hungary could not have hostile pro-British governments with British troops in Greece and soon to be moving into Yugoslavia behind in their flank, and the Germans couldn't have them to their south. So the Germans basically delayed Barbarossa by about 30 to 45 days and occupied and invaded Yugoslavia and Greece and defeated them in about a month, about 45 days. Now, I go back to the Dunkirk thing. Yeah, they let the British troops, you can say they let them get away. But as soon as Greece was occupied, the Germans did two things. One, Hitler ordered that all Greek troops be free to go home and resume their lives, get a job, support their families. And Hitler ordered the German finance ministry to immediately infuse the Greek economy with Reichsmarks to prop up their economy. So the first Greek bailout happened under the Third Reich. So the Greeks need to quit complaining with all this anti-German nonsense. They've been getting bailouts from Germany since 1941. So we go on. Barbarossa is delayed. However, there's some discussion. I see it sometimes in debates on television. I see it on blogs and such, that this was proved to be fatal, that the original start date for Barbarossa was May of 41. Well, there was a problem. There was unseasonably heavy rains and that horrible West Russian mud in the Ukraine and Belarus in May of 41. So even if the Germans would have invaded in May of 41, they would not have had the same speed for their armored spearheads, the Panzer spearheads, as they had in June, because during the time they were down conquering Yugoslavia and Greece, those rains subsided, the roads hardened again. So by June, it was optimal for them to launch, and their armored spearheads just went right through the Russian territory without having to get bogged down in rain and mud that had come unseasonably early in May, which people seem to not factor when they say, well, that was a mistake to delay it or wait until the following year. If they would have waited till the following year, the Soviets would have continually beefed up their invasion force, or may have launched their invasion force. And that's where I'm going with on this Barbarossa campaign. The Germans, when they invaded the Soviet Union in June of 1941, what they encountered was a Soviet invasion force. And some people would say, well, you know, they caught them by surprise. They hit, you know, and they had amazing success, you know, up until December, you know, when they hit the cold. Well, when you hit an invasion force and you hit an invasion force and you catch them off guard, you know, optimally, it's quite easy to rout an invasion force that is prepared for offensive action. And if you really look at what the Germans encountered in Western Russia, if you look at the order of battle between October of 1940 through June of 40, the Soviets had formed their divisions in waves from north to south in their territories and their occupied territories from Poland to the Dnieper River, from Leningrad all the way down to the Crimea, and they followed the same pattern as they would throughout the war. It was the same pattern. It was kind of interesting. And in May of 1941 alone, they had increased their troop presence in the Baltic Republic to 21 divisions alone. They had also moved 26 additional divisions into Belarus and 45 in the Ukraine. They clearly had an invasion force mounted in the western portions, in the Ukraine and Belarus and the Baltic Republics. Here's another example. When the Germans went into Western Russia, normally, just prior, in 1940, the fortress at Brest had only 1,000 troops garrisoned. When the Germans got there in 41, they had seven times that many. There were 7,000 troops at Brest. The Soviets had 10,000 tanks in the Western Military District of the Soviet Union in 1941. The Germans invaded the Soviet Union with a total of 4,000 tanks and self-propelled guns. Of that 4,000 tanks, only 1,400 of them were the newer Mark II and the Mark IV.
And all righty, Rodney, we do have to take a break. We will be right back.
Okay.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
We've been helping people for over 18 years.
Call Zero Debt Guaranteed, 800-477-9256. Ask for free information, no obligation. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com now.
Now more than ever, killing many viruses and bacteria in our homes and at work is important. With the flu epidemic running rampant, you need to protect yourself and your family the best you can with purified air. Our air purifiers not only kill many viruses and bacteria in the air, but on surfaces too. Our air purifiers will also kill molds, fungi, mildew, oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases, removes dust, pollen, pet odors, and smoke. We have portable units, HVAC and industrial size units. In our homes today, protect your family the best you can by calling 1-877-605-9200 or go to our online store at republicbroadcasting.org. Call today to receive your 10% off and free shipping on any home unit. 1-877-605-9200.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations, whose website is wvfoundations.org. All righty. Let's continue. Let me just read you something that somebody emailed me. A person by the name of Douglas said, "I don't believe I've ever heard the term Jewful idiot, which could be a replacement for useful idiot. It's very appropriate term for all Israel firsters like John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Alex Jones, and all of that group." So anyway, just thought that was kind of clever, a Jewful idiot.
Well, follow the money. The Jews always have their useful, like I say, Jewful idiots who's willing to put their, you know, pocketbook ahead of their nation and their people. So, exactly. You know, it's incredible. Getting back, as we said, I think it's well established that what the Germans encountered as they entered the Soviet Union in June 1940 was they essentially encountered an invasion force, and they basically beat the Soviet, that invasion force, to the punch, and that's why they had tremendous success, because they won. They had the element of surprise, and they established early air superiority. The Luftwaffe caught, you know, the Soviets had, I think, probably, if I remember, if I look at the numbers correctly, a 2-to-1 superiority in aircraft, but the German invasion went at 3 a.m, and at 4 a.m, the Luftwaffe had hit the Soviet, frontal Soviet airfields on the ground, and the Soviet aircraft were in battle formation on the ground. So they, you know, the early air superiority and the blitzkrieg tactics, and the fact that The tactics were a little different in the Soviet Union than they were in the West. When they armored spearheads and they captured bridges intact, they encircled the Soviet battle formations and were able to encircle them and continue on until they consolidated their positions. But if you look at how the positions of the Red Army in Western Russia, Belarus, the Baltic republics, and the Ukraine. And then you look at the positioning and the invasion force of the Wehrmacht. The invasion force of the Wehrmacht consisted in three spheres: Army Group North, Army Group Center, and Army Group South. It was specifically designed in three main spheres to head off and to cut off these three big waves that the Red Army had positioned themselves. The Home Guard, the Home Army of the Red Army, which would basically be the peacetime army, did not even engage until 3 weeks into the campaign. That's very, very, very telling. Initially, what's interesting is the Soviet T-34 and the KV-1 tanks, the Russians had held back out of range of German reconnaissance planes. And they did not make an appearance until 2 weeks into the campaign. Now, this, again, we talked about mistakes that were acknowledged by Hitler. When they made their appearance, and those tanks, now this is a key point, those tanks were produced at two key plants, one at Leningrad, which was a major plant, which produced about 20 to 25% of the KV-1 tanks, and the other plant at an interesting city, which produced just about 50% of the T-34 and KV-1. And we need to pause. The T-34 and KV-1 could outgun the main Panzer III and Panzer Mark IV tanks. They had heavy armor and a heavy gun, and only this is where the legend of the German 88-millimeter anti-aircraft gun became well known as an anti-tank gun, was in the Soviet campaign. Because only that gun initially could take out the Soviet T-34 and KV-1 head-on until the development of the bigger German Tigers. Well, anyway, like I said, these two specific heavy Soviet tanks, which were unknown initially to the Germans, were produced at about 25% of them produced at a factory in Leningrad, which would eventually be encircled by Army Group North, and then about 50% of them were developed and manufactured at a city called Stalingrad. And we're going to see why Stalingrad was not a mistake as we talk about. There you have about 70-75% of the T-34 and KV-1, the main heavy battle tank, which inflicted heavy losses on the initial German tanks until the Tigers came into heavy production and made its debut on the Eastern Front. Why it was critically important to encircle Leningrad and why that siege of Leningrad was important, and why Stalingrad was heavily important as well for a whole variety of reasons. So we move on. We've talked about and we've heard people saying that mistakes were made. Now also finally we talk about Hitler acknowledging mistakes. When reports of the KV-1 and T-34 and their capabilities were reported to Hitler, and by now when the Soviet campaign was launched, Hitler moved his headquarters to Rastenburg in East Prussia. When the reports of these two tanks were reported to Hitler, he openly said, "Had I known about these two tanks and their capabilities, I would have delayed until we had capable tanks to compete with them," and I'm paraphrasing with them, i.e., probably the Tigers, because the Tigers were in development. But Hitler did make that comment. He said, "I would have delayed the invasion."
They were not really militarily ready because of the situation after World War I and the demilitarization. But anyway, we're going to a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Extend your life with Extendovite. Why do over 50% of North Americans suffer from some form of chronic ailment? Could it be due to a toxic overload? It's time to take back your life. Get the lead out as well as the cadmium, mercury, and calcium. Extendivite is a garlic cayenne supplement with five other herbs that acts like a natural Drano, cleaning out the stored toxins, restoring your energy and youthfulness that we've lost. If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, or fear, then Extendivite is for you. Available in either capsules or liquid, you too can see why Extendivite is the number one heart drop available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Time to relax and unwind. What better way to do so than with Santa Barbara Bells? For over 25 years, our wind chimes have been helping people to relax and enjoy life. Turn your home environment into a pleasurable experience. From the small overture chime to the large super bass, you will find just the right chime to enjoy. All wood, strings, and cordage are protected for long life, and all parts are rust-proof. You have 10 sizes to choose from. To see and hear more of the chimes, go to SantaBarbaraBells.com or call us at 805-733-1513. Santa Barbara Bells is currently having a springtime sale. Come to the website and save up to 50% on all of our chimes. SantaBarbaraBells.com.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. That website is wviewfoundations.org. We will take your calls at 800-313-9443.
Okay, Deanna, one, we're seeing some good comments coming up in the chat room. I'm going to address them. I had planned for those. One of the other I've heard mistakes, particularly in the Soviet campaign, was the Germans had overstretched its supply lines. Well, that did happen at Stalingrad when the Russians encircled them and pushed, you know, the German lines back, and basically Stalingrad became a pocket or a Kessel as they go. But as far as up until then, that did not happen. And let me explain this. Each German Panzer division consisted of 200 tanks, but with that division came 2,150 command and support vehicles consisting of fuel, ammo, and repair and maintenance. Each German Panzer division was well supplied. The Germans never had that problem. The first time the Germans ran into supply problems was when they were actually encircled at Stalingrad. Where the Soviets had problems was their divisions were actually larger in terms of tank size. You know, they had, as I said, they had 10,000 tanks in the Western Military District. And this, they never changed their tactics or structure. They were clearly building an invasion force late 40, 41, because their styling, their form and substance, once they went on the offensive, such as when they did the counterattack at Stalingrad, it mirrored what they were their buildup when they counterattacked at Stalingrad and throughout the war. But a Soviet division consisted of about 350 tanks, but they only carried about 1,300 support vehicles. The Soviets, and there was a reason for that, the Soviets were on their home turf. And this is going to answer a question that popped up in the chat room, and I'm going to address this. Early in the campaign, Hitler's generals, again, they had this philosophical issue. They wanted to go, you know, go for the home run and shoot straight to Moscow, and Hitler overruled them and says, no, you're to shift directions and go to the south and take Minsk and then Kiev. And that, you know, Guderian later in Man 2 criticized that decision. But as the modern Bundeswehr military historian said, Hitler was right about that. When you were a smaller nation like Germany attacking a much larger nation with abundant resources in terms of men, like this Red Army material, you have to, you know, do it smart. You have to, you know, you actually have to take into consideration you are actually in their territory. You have to cut off its resources. And that was what Hitler's overall tactics was. Had the Germans, had they followed Guderian and Manstein's plan and gone, you know, and charged on Moscow early on as they wanted to, they would have left over 1 million Red Army soldiers in their flank behind them. Minsk alone had about 320,000 Red Army troops, and Kiev had 500,000. And Hitler, as well as some of the other generals, thought that was absolutely nonsense. You do not leave that large amount of enemy soldiers on your flank where they can actually receive aid and comfort by the enemy population. That was the reason why they did not attack and implement Operation Typhoon, the assault on Moscow, when they did. And bear in mind, Hitler was never keen, never considered Moscow a military necessity to begin with. Hitler, like I had said, and like the Bundeswehr general, and I was really shocked to hear him make these comments because, you know, there's been a significant number of people who have been saying that Hitler was the first modern military theorist, and, you know, let's bear this out. He had said from the get-go, you have to smash and destroy the Red Army's ability to be an effective fighting force, which is what this plan was. And then two, cut off its resources. And we're going to see this as we talk about Stalingrad now. So Hitler did not authorize the initial strike on Moscow when the generals did. He said, we want to clean up and clear those pockets of about a million Red Army troops, you know, in our rear at Minsk and Kiev, which they did. And then we'll take Moscow as it's necessary. And it was right. You know, the South and the Russians were building up a counter strike, as one of your persons in the chat room was talking about, near the Pripyat Marsh. That was later. I'm still in 1940. I'm still in the early stages. This happened in 1941.
Alrighty. We do have some callers lining up in
okay.
the, so should we take a call?
Let's take a call and then we'll talk about Stalingrad. I do want to talk about Stalingrad because that's important, because many people think that is a turning point and a mistake, and it needs to be clarified that was not a turning point in the war.
Right. All righty, let's take Joel in Illinois. Joel,
okay,
welcome to
you,
the program.
Thank you, ma'am. Basically, I want to bring you up to the present day on the subject of euthanasia. Now, I'm looking at an article. It's written by a guy named Michael Tennant, and he's a reporter for The New American, and this was just published last year in June. And his headline is, excuse me, British Health Service euthanizes 130,000 patients a year. So right now in jolly old England, 130,000 cancer victims and senior citizens are being put to sleep every year, and it's a non-issue. It's not anything to be worried about. Now, if you think that ideas like this are remote because they're in jolly old England, let me tell you about what's happening on our border with Mexico and our southern tier states. We have had in recent years a little over 100 hospitals in the United States on the border with Mexico have gone bankrupt. The reason they've gone bankrupt is because when a Mexican falls off his motorcycle when he's blind drunk in Mexico City, and he hits his head and he goes into a coma, his relatives toss the comatose body in the trunk of their Chevrolet, they drive across the border to the United States, and they dump Jose at the emergency room. Now, in this country, in America, it's a felony for a doctor to turn away an illegal immigrant at the emergency room doors. So that's what's going on right now. We have a little over 100 bankrupt hospitals on our southern border because we are required by law to provide coma wards for drunken Mexicans who hit their heads in motorcycle accidents. And taxpayers in England are being put to sleep at the rate of $130,000 a year. So please, ladies and gentlemen, don't feel guilty because the Germans might have had a discussion thread going at one time about euthanasia, because that doesn't even scratch the surface of what's going on today. Okie doke, I'm going to hang up.
Well, thank you, Joel. Your comments, Rodney.
Well, he's correct. The Germans, like I say, they reacted to requests from their citizenry, and it was done by a case-by-case basis. And I think I've explained that. I'll go into greater detail when we do the so-called Holocaust show, Deanna. But again, you know, if the West does it, if Britain does it, if the United States does it, then it's moral. If the Germans do it, they're good. You know, they're wicked evil because, the Germans have that, weird accent, that my grandparents had. So,
right.
What can I say?
And we all know how evil and bad they are, and that they're the epitome of everything that's ever happened wrong.
Sure.
Anywhere in the world, right?
Sure. Sure. Well, let me talk about Stalingrad for a little bit, because that is one that people really, there's a lot of, the Russians they've recently talked about renaming the city Stalingrad, and they talk about it being and clearly, they won that battle, and so they're going to celebrate it and such, but Stalingrad was part of an overall, that was the summer offensive in 41. And again, there was heated debate within the general staff with Hitler. The general staff actually wanted to resume and strike on Moscow. And again, Hitler made the case that if we're going to defeat a country like the Soviet Union, we have to knock out its resources. And plus the Germans needed additional resources. So it was a twofold, plan. The Germans wanted to strike to the south, to the oil fields of the Caucasus, and Paulus would actually attack Stalingrad, while Wilhelm List would attack south into the Caucasus of the oil fields, going as far as Grozny. Stalingrad was critical because of, like we said earlier in the show, you had almost 50% of the T-34 tanks. There was actually three or four tank factories and heavy armament factories and other munitions factories in Stalingrad. Plus, it was a port. The Volga River is, think about the Mississippi River in the United States, how much trade goes north and south on the Mississippi River. The Volga River, it fed Moscow, it fed the entire European, what was still, the Soviet occupied portions of the Soviet Union, the European portion of the Soviet Union. So if the Germans could, one, capture the oil field south in the Caucasus and knock out Stalingrad, which was a port city, then they would basically begin starving portions of the Soviet Union, because they'd already captured the breadbasket in the Ukraine. And we're seeing that portions of that was successful because the Soviets were having internal problems with food shortages and such, and we'll see later, but in 43 the Soviets were having near famine issues as well. They would eventually even talk about peace, having a separate peace issue like they did in the First World War, which did not come to fruition. But in any case, that was the plan. The Germans would attack to the south, they split their forces, Paulus would take out Stalingrad and capture that key industrial center, and therefore cut off the trade route and starve out Moscow and finally finish off Leningrad. There was some strategic importance to cutting off the resources and cutting off the ability of the Soviets to wage war. And that is the difference between just going on and capturing the capital and planting the flag on the Kremlin. The Russians could have done that. The Germans could have done that, and the Russians still would have been fighting. They just would have evacuated Moscow to some other obscure city, probably Gorky, and they would have, or some other place that they had backed up as a backup capital, and they still would have kept fighting. I mean, Napoleon captured Moscow and didn't do any good. You have to starve a nation like that out and rob them of the ability to wage war, cut off their resources. Hitler understood that, and so did some other people in his upper echelon. So, Anyway, it's important to understand that Paulus, when he attacked Stalingrad, he was also tying up about 70 to 75 Soviet divisions while Wilhelm List attacked south and was going for the oil fields in the Caucasus. Now, where the mistake was, and this was universally Hitler acknowledged this, here's another statement by Hitler. The Soviets prepared a counterattack. The Italians, Hungarians, Romanians were charged with holding the German flank positions to the north. And the German general staff had brought this to Hitler's attention. And when the Russians launched their counterattack, the Hungarians and the Italians and the Romanians, they basically just dropped their rifles and ran. They put up relatively no fight. And Hitler admitted that was a big mistake, leaving the northern flank positions, the defense of those northern flanking positions to the Hungarians and the Romanians and the Italians. He said they didn't put up hardly any fight. As soon as they heard the Russian tanks coming, they basically retreated. They put up zero fight at all, and Hitler acknowledged that was a defeat. I mean, that was a mistake, and as a result, the Stalingrad was encircled. Now, here is a point of debate among people that what I call Monday morning quarterbacking, is Paulus should have immediately broke out and left. Well, had Paulus broke out and left immediately, the Russians would have, not only would they have taken Stalingrad, but they would have also cut off Wilhelm List's ability to pull out of the Caucasus. And not only would Stalingrad have been a catastrophe, but there would have been all of List's divisions would have been encircled and cut off down in the Caucasus, and the result would have been absolutely catastrophic. So Stalingrad had to hold out to give List to the south in the Caucasus time to pull out once it became clear that the flanks that were held by the Romanians and the Italians and the Hungarians had broken, and that the Soviets had broken through. So it's amazing that the Soviets became so fixated on breaking Stalingrad and didn't just hold it and then proceed south to attack List. And they basically, List was able to get out of there. The fact that Goering thought he could resupply Stalingrad, with Heikels in the middle of that horrible winter. That was clearly a mistake. There's no doubt about it. There was just no way that they could resupply that that many troops and provide that amount of tonnage of resupplies given that situation. But was it a mistake? Was Stalingrad a mistake? No, it was part of an overall strategic plan. The mistake was anticipating that your allies, the Romanians and the Hungarians and the Italians, would put up a fight, and they did not put up a fight. They cut and run at the first sight of the Soviets, let me rephrase that. The Romanians did attempt to put up a fight, but when the Hungarians and the Italians ran and left them there, it was pretty hard for them to put up any serious resistance at all. So, just in summary, Field Marshal Paulus and the Sixth Army, as far as I'm concerned, we honor the hero, the people at the Alamo. And I look upon the Sixth Army in Stalingrad much like Americans look upon the defenders of the Alamo. They were in a hopeless position. But they had to hold out because their comrades to the south in the Caucasus, which was a much larger force, they would have been cut off as well. And when you have the Sixth Army itself tying up and fighting off 75 Soviet divisions, buying time for your comrades to get out of there. And once they were evacuated, once List's army had evacuated from the Caucasus, there was a rescue attempt. General Hoff on Christmas of 1942 tried to break through and create a hallway, lack of a better term, trying to get them out, and it just didn't work. It just didn't work out. And I've seen interviews with German veterans in Hoff's army that said they no longer celebrated Christmas when they were shooting up flares. Each side was Hoff's army was shooting up flares, and then people in the Sixth Army, the troops in the Sixth Army, were shooting up flares. They could see each other, and then the advance stopped. They couldn't get to one another, and Stalingrad a military mistake. No, there was There was military defeats there. Your flanks were broken. Your allies broke. But your Stalingrad had to hold out to prevent a much greater catastrophe, and it was a tragedy. But it was not the turning point in the war, and we need to talk about that a little bit. A lot of people write off and say that was a turning point in the war, and that after Stalingrad, and that was not. The German army actually went on the offensive again at Kursk in 43 to close the Kursk pocket. And I think probably that was the turning point. Yeah, it was considered the greatest turning point.
All righty. We do have to go to a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with hawthorn, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. HerbalHealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to HerbalHealer.com today. HerbalHealer.com.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Are back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. That website is wvfoundations.org. Okay, we have about 3 minutes, so
well, real quick, because I want to take it away. Item Kursk, the Battle of Kursk in 43, the largest tank battle. That was true point, Deanna. And a couple of things with that was the German traitors within various elements of the German general staff and the actual intelligence agency kept giving the Soviets the battle plan, so the Soviets knew when it was going to be launched. That, coupled with the transfer of panzers from the Battle of Kursk to Italy proved to be a mistake, because even with that, Manstein, with the Soviets knowing and being prepared, Manstein probably could have won that battle if the panzers hadn't been transferred. And that proved to be a turning point. After that, the Germans were in full retreat from Barbarossa. It was a combination of the general staff and some not realizing it took a modern tactics to win that battle. Finally, let's talk about mistakes on the American side. After Mein Kampf, Hitler actually was preparing to write another book. It was called Hitler's Second Book. It was never published. It was about foreign policy. And in that second book, it's called Hitler's Second Book. It's available now. But Hitler warned about multinational corporations in it, and Hitler said that it would take Aryan inventions and would give them to non-white people that who would work cheaper and would put white people out of work. Hitler warned about this, and he did this in 1928 and said many would laugh at such a possibility. Well, that's happened. Well, there's a mistake on the part of modern white people. Hitler also predicted in that book, because it was about foreign policy, about the future, relations with America and Soviet, that if the United States did not either throw off its Jewish yoke and Jewish mentality, which enslaved most Americans, the United States would become a colony of Asia. China sound familiar? He predicted that Eastern Europeans would soon become so disgusted with communism they would cast it off no matter how bloody the struggle. Seems to me all that has happened. So National Socialism may have been crushed militarily by the combined might of world Jewry and plutocratic capitalism and communism at the time. But when I look at Hitler's second book and those three revelations, it appears to me that history has proven National Socialism to have been correct, and that while the good guys may have lost World War II, their ideas proved to be correct historically. What can I say?
Exactly. Well, it's been wonderful, as usual, to have you on the program, and I think we have you scheduled for next week also.
That show.
Pardon me?
I'm looking forward to that show, and we'll get into the euthanasia issue in greater detail. It's probably more appropriate for that show. And if people have any questions or comments, they can email me at director@wvfoundations.org.
All righty. Well, we look forward to hearing back from you then, and I hope that everyone has a wonderful weekend. And again, thank you, Rodney, for being on the program today. And we will talk to you on Monday. Take care.
Have a great weekend.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.